So just to bring you up to date on nominalizations, I have a statement that was made by a politician. And I want you to notice how many nominalizations are in this statement and what kinds of questions you might ask. So he says, we, the members of the New Republican Party, at least he's specifying who we is, right? We believe that the preservation and enhancement of the values that strengthen and protect individual freedom, family life, communities, and neighborhoods, and the liberty of our beloved nation should be at the heart of any legislation or political program presented to the American people. Perfectly vague, yes. Do you have any idea of what was said?
No.
Not really. It sounded great, though. I mean, would any of you disagree with individual protecting individual freedom? How would that look? Protecting family life, communities, and neighborhoods. And liberty. Liberty. We're all for liberty. How specifically would we protect liberty?
Well, it seems like that statement is just trying to draw everybody's attention to values that people have in common and then just draw people in without saying what it's about.
That's right. And that's what nominalizations are really good for. Uh-huh. Yeah. And then he goes on to say, the U.S. must always stand for peace and liberty. Always stand for peace and liberty in the world and the rights of the individuals. I don't know. Doesn't say. This was written by Ronald Reagan. He was considered the great communicator. And think about it. I mean, it could inspire you. You could go, oh, yeah, he's talking about values. Uh-huh. But, yeah, right. Well, see, if you told people how you were going to do this, then you couldn't follow through after election. Oh, what was I watching? Oh, I know. I turned on the TV. I don't get TV at home. And so when I got here the other night, I turned on the TV and the Peanuts Halloween show was on. The Great Pumpkin, where Linus is running for president of the school, and he's making all of these promises. And, about holidays for the kids and different food in the cafeteria and all of this, and he gets elected because the kid he's running against votes for him, for Linus, because he says, I really think he would be a better president. And then Linus goes into the principal to have the discussion about, he's the president of the school now, about how we're going to create these holidays and everything, and he comes back out like this with the sweat just dripping off his face. And to the, is it Sally, the little sister? You know, she says, what did you do? And she takes a look at him and she says, you caved in, just like all those other politicians, just promises, promises, promises. And she kicks the locker and walks away. But it's true. If they promised specific things, you know they couldn't deliver on all those specific things, then they would have people in an uproar. So they have to promise at the nominalization level, saying these are things that we can all support. And then people get on the bandwagon. Well, I'm not just about Ronald Reagan, but here's a little thing that, do you all remember Ross Perot? Oh, yeah. He was going to run for president at some point. And he wrote an article, and these were the things that he was standing for. It's really interesting, the guy who had written this column was using metamodel inquiries after each of the statements, and he was right on about it. So Ross Perot said he was going to rebuild the job base and put people back to work. Now that sounds good. And this reporter says, how? How is he going to do that? And then he says he's going to stimulate the growth of small businesses. And again, the reporter says, how? He's going to develop an intelligent, supportive relationship between government and business. Make a picture of that.
Right.
Make a picture of that. Intelligent, supportive relationship. Now, that's a nominalization, a triple nominalization. An intelligent, supportive relationship. So it isn't saying how we're going to be relating. It's making it a thing, right? So that's where you start paying attention to nominalizations between government and business. And again, this guy says, how? And so he goes through all of these. And every statement Ross Perot made, the guy is saying, how are you going to do that? Because he had some great ideas, but he wasn't saying specifically how he was going to do it at all. So I would just suggest, I don't know that there are any politicians I have heard give speeches that are specific about exactly what they will do. All of them seem to be artfully vague. Yes?
It seems like the only thing that they could possibly do in there is to say, here's what I will fight for.
Oh.
Because then it's what they're able to control. The
right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Rather than the path that Ross Perot got taken down.
Right. Yes.
The BBC ran a story on this about 2 weeks ago about political linguistics.
Really?
And their analysis of British politicians was the last one to speak in very demonstrative statements was Winston Churchill. And since then, there's not been a politician in Britain who has said anything other than
nominalization.
Winston Churchill was pretty cut to the chase.
Winston Churchill. That's going back quite a ways, isn't it? Well, it's the language of politics, and you really need to know that as your, is it not tomorrow, Tuesday? I've already voted because I wasn't sure I was going to be home. As you go to the polls, just know that you may or may not have an idea of the stand of whomever you are voting for. Yeah.
I'm curious to know about this language, sort of as you said, the psychology behind it, because it almost, first of all, it disrupts because you, like you said, you're sitting there kind of going, like, trying to figure out what that looks like. But it almost seems hypnotic too, because when they categorize it, especially around things like liberty, I can't speak up against liberty, but what the heck does liberty mean, right? So there's just this very interesting hypnotic thing that goes on around it that prevents you almost from questioning it, as we're talking about political language anyway. So I just wanted to know what your perspective on that was.
And it does. It gets you to go inside to figure out what your stand might be on that. So anything that gets you out of the conscious moment of thought is hypnotic.
So
it's hypnosis.
You're disassociated state, right? Uh-huh. So you're not paying attention to what's going on.
You've gone inside your own body, or you're trying to figure out your own thoughts, and you're not listening. You're not present to what is being said. Yeah. Horatio?
No, it was kind of what Lauren was saying. Because I was in a situation where I had to defend techno babble, right? Mm-hmm. And these big companies, and with products that were being uninvested in, and mm-hmm. customers that were unhappy. But they were techie mm-hmm. people, so they like specificity. And yet you go in and you have to turn them around. And in some ways, I think I did provide more specifics, but I often had to not overcommit because I knew that the company was failing in delivering to these people, right? To these customers who had heard it from five other people like them. So I just felt like somehow I was able to get out of those conversations without being nailed to the wall. And I think part of it is this is really good for a skeptic because you could put the BS meter on. And I'm sure some of them thought I was giving them BS, but I was probably less BS like than the other guy they heard.
Mm-hmm.
But in some ways, if you're the guy communicating, you can, knowing when to go into specificity, when not to kind of paint the vision, like somebody said, the concept. Like when I would get into specificity, their eyes would glaze over. And these were technical people.
Uh-huh.
So what they really wanted to hear was the direction and the commitment and the authenticity that this guy was going to make a change. And they wanted the concept sometimes. Because if you got into the specifics, they would glaze over.
Okay, so he's making a really accurate description of what happens when, what you're saying, it becomes hypnotic, glaze over. It's so the lights go out in somebody's eyes. So right now I'm looking at you. Can you all see that? I'm looking and focusing. This is, the lights just went out. Can you see that from where you're sitting? It's that defocus, that's that glaze over.
I always take it and then bring them back with something, right? Uh-huh.
And that's one way that you can know whether you're on track when you are asking questions using the meta model. Do you see somebody? The lights go out, and what it is, it's a defocus of the pupils. Like this. No, they're not nodding anymore. They've gone in here. Yeah.
In the corporate world, I find mission statements are usually phenomenal. And so there's a great thing online if you're ever bored, look at a mission statement generator. And it's, you know, we endeavor to build the highest quality products for the most discerning customers in the world and provide our customers with the best possible customer service in a first-rate environment of zero quality defects. But there are mission statement generators that are hilarious. Just stick in words.
Similar thing to help desk responses, I think it's three-word sentence that's randomly generated. And it could be like any technical problem. It's because server overgeneralization solution or something like that.
And
it's like, it works, but it's three random words.
Okay. Three random words for a help desk. Okay. So, yeah. Again, the intent of learning about the meta model, I think first, and I'll just give you my opinion, is that you can clean up your own internal language. So that when you are putting so much pressure on yourself about what you should do or how you always blow it, you're never successful, nothing ever goes right, you listen to yourself and go, what am I doing? You wonder why I'm starting to feel depressed. Because that's what I've got running inside myself. And learning how to question your own internal dialogue, to me, that's the beauty of it. And then it's also helpful when you're communicating with somebody else. And I love what it can do in a relationship if both people are committed to, let's be specific enough that we can work on seeing if our pictures match about what we're agreeing we want as a couple or as a family or, you know, as a team, a work team. What is it we all that we want that we can make pictures of? And the way you do it is keep checking your internal pictures. And Aaron, it helps if you look up to try to find the pictures, the internal pictures. Just, you know, keep checking your internal pictures. What do you get a sense of in there? And if anything's missing, you need to ask the information that would clear that up.
I really love the connection that's forming when you think about the outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
And then taking how I've articulated an outcome and actually dropping it through here,
mm-hmm,
to see where the gaps are. Right, where I may be avoiding specificity,
mm-hmm, in your outcome,
in my outcome, okay, and what that might be bringing up for me in terms, mm-hmm, of a fear of committing to the action that, mm-hmm, it would take, or fear underlying that.
Mm-hmm. Right. So looking at how you've chosen to word an outcome, and what might be missing out of it, uh-huh, and then, and what would be the motivation behind you getting to do that? Yeah.